I think everyone is wrong about postmodernism. And I really mean this. I'm not just being hyperbolic because this is a YouTube video that I want people to watch so that I can get enough clicks so that I can afford to live. Now, we all know there's a bunch of dumb guys on the internet that use the word postmodernism to create a sense of fear and paranoia about some scary boogeyman that's gonna get you and your kids. There's also more progressive and I think well-intentioned folks who are also kind of missing the point when they talk about postmodernism. And this happened to me because I made a video about why Trump could be considered a postmodern president, and a Brazilian philosopher made a response video where he thought I was wrong because postmodernism to him is a philosophical project worth defending. I, of course, respectfully disagree. And one of my favorite YouTubers, Tom Nicholas, recently made a video about postmodernism, how it died, and who killed it. But I still think all of these discussions are missing the point. So today, I'm going to sort out the issue of postmodernism once and for all with 100% certainty and clarity. And to me, the biggest problem in this conversation is I still think no one is talking about what postmodernism actually means and why understanding it is so important, both to make sense of the mess that we're in and to maybe one day help us get out of it. Okay, so something I want to emphasize right now, and I'm going to expand on this throughout this video, is that postmodernism is not a philosophy. It's not a philosophical system. It's not a theory of morality or ethics or anything like that. I'm gonna say that one more time just so everyone in the back can hear it. Postmodernism is not a philosophical system. I'll say it again. Postmodernism, it's not a philosophical system. Postmodernism is not a philosophical system. So to understand it, I want to look at the work of two writers that wrote incredibly long and dense books that everyone acts like they've read, but I don't believe anyone has actually read any of these books. Talking about David Foster Wallace and Frederick Jameson. Now, novelist David Foster Wallace wrote a really long novel that no one who has had sex has ever read, and that book is called Infinite Jest. The title of the book comes from the name of a fictional film that's also referred to as The Entertainment. Now, this film, Infinite Jest, is so enjoyable that it completely consumes the lives of those who watch it to the point that they die. You know, imagine that, being so addicted to what happens on screens that are in front of you all the day that it takes over your life, eventually kills you because you can't stop looking at the screen. Hold on. Oh, wow. Hold on. One of the apps that's owned by an evil guy has a button on it, and it might make me feel something if I stare at it again. Nope, now I feel bad. And this is something that Foster Wallace was concerned with more generally. Listen to this, which he said in an interview he gave while promoting Infinite Jest. He said, because the technology is just going to get better and better and better and better, and it's going to get easier and easier and more convenient and more pleasurable to be alone with images on a screen given to us by people who do not love us but want our money, which is all right in low doses, right? But if that's the basic main staple of your diet, you're gonna die. In a meaningful way, you're going to die. Now, the idea here is that we live in a culture where consumption is the only thing that matters, and nothing feels more meaningful than consuming entertaining content. But when we get sucked into these types of content, it's sort of like our humanity gets sucked out of us. And we lose that special part of us that makes us more than just a bunch of nodes in a network of entertainment and consumption. And Foster Wallace connected all this with the cultural trend of postmodernism. And he associated this with the use of irony, cynicism, and irreverence in all forms of media. And also with the increasing commercialization of everything. I mean, there's a theme in Infinite Jest where corporations start sponsoring time. So rather than a year being like 2025, it's like the year of the Whopper or the year of the trial size Dove bar. Now, Foster Wallace responds to this culture with the call for a new sincerity. That's not a phrase that he used, but it's a phrase that other people used when they talked about him. But he wanted a form of sincerity, of meaningfulness in art and culture. For him, this meant that rather than art and culture being detached and ironic, you know, whether stuff like Andy Warhol's Campbell soup paintings or South Park commenting on the crappiness of its own animation, he wanted art that tried to communicate something authentic, you know, things that aimed at a shared human experience. And this gives us a sense of what Foster Wallace's critique of postmodernism was, that it turns art, which should be something that communicates important and urgent aspects of our humanity, into a detached and ironic commodity that serves the purpose of easy consumption without the necessity of critical thought. Now, while Foster Wallace does a really good job at describing the symptoms of postmodernism, the Marxist literary critic Frederick Jameson gives us a full-on Dr. House-style diagnosis of the cause of postmodernism. I'm going to be bold here and say that any of these discussions of postmodernism that don't reckon with the work of Frederick Jameson should not be taken seriously. Okay, so to understand Jameson's critique of postmodernism, we first need to understand that dominant economic systems produce accompanying cultural systems. So in this way, when we talk about postmodernism, what we're really talking about is a cultural system that aligns with or serves the purposes of an economic system, which is late capitalism. Which is why Jameson's most basic definition for postmodernism is that it is the cultural logic of late capitalism, which means that it describes both the culture that's produced under capitalism, how we consume that culture, and how that culture shapes how we understand the world and how we think of political possibility. Now, in his pivotal essay on the topic, Jameson outlines a few principles of postmodernism. Now, some of these characteristics, according to Jameson, are a new depthlessness, a weakening of historicity, gives us a type of schizophrenia, and a new emotional ground tone. I'm not going to talk about all of that. I think you should read the essay. I will link it in the description. But I think history is the most important place to start right here. But if you want to hear me talk about this more in the future, please let me know, because I would love nothing more than just to make a bunch of videos where I just talk about Frederick Jameson and wear salmon-colored shirts. Now, one of the most dangerous aspects of postmodernism is that it's turned the news media into just another form of entertainment, one in which narratives can be constructed out of thin air with no connection to history or facts. Take the recent example of Donald Trump claiming that there's a white genocide happening against South African farmers. I mean, for example, look at this headline that says Trump confronts Ramaphosa with footage of South African leaders calling for genocide. So when you look at this article, it seems to be the case that there is a call for genocide against white farmers in South Africa. Or there's other articles like this one that say that Trump's Africana refugee policy based on unfounded claims about land, white farmer genocide. So how can this one story be covered so differently? It's because most media organizations prioritize clicks over clear and accurate information. They focus on sensational stories and controversies rather than a clear discussion of the issues. Which is why I'm so happy that this video is sponsored by Ground News, which is where I found all of these articles. Their app and website pulls stories from across the globe and puts them all in one place so that you can get the full picture on every story. Now, this story has been reported on by 132 sources. Now, Ground News shows me where each source leans politically with their bias distribution chart. They also show me the factuality rating, which scores the reliability of reporting, and then they even let you see who owns each source. All these factors shape how stories are framed, and when you put them all together, it really lets you see how bias impacts coverage. Now, the feature that I go back to over and over again is their blind spot feed. This highlights stories that are being disproportionately reported by either side of the political spectrum. It's nice to see what's going on outside of my own little bubble and to see how the other side is covering the stories that I'm interested in. Now, as it becomes harder than ever to trust the news and the sources that we see on the internet, Ground News gives me the tools to think critically about what's happening in the world, how it's being covered, and why. Now, if you want to check it out, head over to ground.news/Michael Burns and try it for yourself. When you use my link, you're going to get 40% off their Vantage plan, which is what I've been using to get unlimited access to all of these features. I think Ground News is doing important work, and I hope you'll check them out. So to put this in really simple terms, if we want to accurately understand the present, if we want to understand the world we live in and all its accompanying problems and issues, we have to understand history, right? We have to understand how we got here. But what postmodernism does, according to Jameson, is it disconnects us from that history. It puts us in a state where we think we live in an eternal present without any connection to history or historicity. You know, Jameson famously says that history is what hurts. It's what refuses desire. It sets limits to individual and collective praxis. So Jameson writes, if we do not achieve some general sense of a cultural dominant, then we fall back into a view of present history as sheer heterogeneity, random difference, a coexistence of a host of distinct forces whose effectivity is undecidable. So think about it this way, like if you don't understand history, if you do not have a connection to that which came before you, you can't understand how you got where you are. So when he talks about a cultural dominant, he's basically saying we need a framework by which we can understand where we are and how we got there. We need a framework by which we can use history to make sense of the present. And I mentioned before that he talks about a certain type of schizophrenia that we get. Now, he doesn't mean a literal schizophrenia, but he thinks we end up in a schizophrenic position when we lose that connection to history. And again, he thinks this is something that is caused by postmodernism, which again is the cultural logic of late capitalism. The point with all of this is that this all serves the end goals of capitalism. Now, when we don't have an understanding of our present, when we don't have that historical understanding of where we are, that's when we end up with this type of schizophrenic experience. It gives us a heightened intensity because all we have is the present moment. So all we feel is what's happening right now. And in a sense, this means that like when stuff happens, we either feel super anxious and despairing, or we feel super euphoric and happy. So either everything is screwed or everything is magical and nothing in between, because all there is the magic or the terror of that moment. Now, another thing that happens under postmodern culture for Jameson is we have this split between history and nostalgia. Now, history, of course, is what actually happened. It's sets of historical conditions that lead to where we are right now. It's understanding the steps that got us here. Nostalgia is an imagined picture of a past that maybe didn't happen anyways. Think about the way that advertising and marketing sell us a vision of the past. They give us something to connect to that serves some purpose that sort of makes the past what we wanted it to be. And while history can help us understand the present and maybe understand how to change the present, nostalgia makes us sort of passive. It gives us a vision of history that never actually happened that often serves a commercial purpose. And when we don't have a sense of history, we can't unify the past, present, and future of our experience. Now, one example I can think of here is the summer of 2020. There's a lot of protests that broke out in America after the police killing of George Floyd. We were still in the COVID era as well. At least where I live, there were some protests and marches where there was like 100,000 people in the street and it felt like we were doing something. We're going to change society and we're standing up against, you know, capitalism and patriarchy and white supremacy. And then we kind of just started doing other stuff. We got back to normal. It all stayed the same. But the point there is when we're in this pure present, when we're not connected to history, we just feel whatever we feel in that moment. We only understand the moment relative to the moment itself, which means that maybe we're not skeptical enough about ways we're being manipulated. Maybe it means we can't see the historical connection to where we are and where we came from. Maybe we can't use historical examples as a way to understand where we are in the present. Here's another quote from Jameson. He writes, "If we are unable to unify the past, present, and future of the sentence, then we are similarly unable to unify the past, present, and future of our own biographical experience or psychic life." Basically, if we can't understand history in the context of analyzing art, we struggle to use history to understand our lives and the world that we live in. So just to summarize, the gist here is that for Jameson, postmodernism takes away any sense of history, any connection to history. It keeps us caught in a present. We feel schizophrenic because we can't unify what's happening to what has happened before. And of course, nostalgia is created as a trap to keep us focused on a past that never happened that doesn't help us understand our future. Another thing that happens in a lot of the contemporary discussion of postmodernism is people make moral judgments. So some people say that it's morally bad and evil and not good. There's a lot of these guys. Others want to say that morally it's great, that it promotes diversity and open-mindedness and stuff like that. And I think both of those cases are wrong, and ultimately both of them miss the point. And Jameson thinks this happens when we treat postmodernism as a stylistic condition and not as a historical condition. Jameson writes, "I cannot stress too greatly the radical distinction between a view for which the postmodern is one optional style among many others available, and one which seeks to grasp it as the cultural dominant of the logic of late capitalism." Which is why he thinks if we treat postmodernism as a style, we end up making moral judgments about it. Whereas when we acknowledge that it's a historical condition, then it can offer us the chance to dialectically attempt to think about our present time in history. You know, as Jameson says, when we treat postmodernism in terms of morality or moralizing judgments, we are making a category mistake. And I think this is so crucial because so much of the discussion on the internet about postmodernism has to do with its morality or its moralism or the ethics of postmodernism. But as Jameson notes, that's a full-on category error. You know, the point isn't to say whether it's good or bad or smart or dumb. It simply is. It is a historical condition that we are living under. And to try to critique it as a moral condition is like critiquing the morality of humidity. You know, you're going to be sweating whether you like it or not. And I'll say more about this, but Jameson gets at this because Jameson is a Marxist. And what he's doing here is avoiding one of the same mistakes that a lot of people make when they talk about capitalism. Now, guys, this is really important. Marx did not think that capitalism was bad. We sometimes want to read Marxism as a moral philosophy or as a way for us to just say like, yeah, capitalism is bad. Capitalism is immoral. It can be good or bad, and we think it's bad. But Marx was a dialectical thinker, which means that he was interested in thinking about how capitalism was good and bad at the same time. You know, I kind of think the rapper Future has outlined this dialectic pretty well, you know, because it's basically like capitalism is good and bad at the same damn time. You know, postmodernism can be good and bad at the same damn time. This leads us to another really important point. Please listen up here. Postmodernism is not Marxist. There's no such thing as postmodern neo-Marxism. It doesn't make any sense. There's no magical connection by which postmodernism becomes Marxism or Marxism creates postmodernism. It's not how it works. But a lot of the dumb guys will tell you that that's how it works. They're wrong. I'm right. And to be clear, the reason I'm right is because I read books, and the wrong guys tend to not read books. Jameson is a Marxist critic. That's what he does. That's his style. He's using the framework of Marxism to diagnose the cultural conditions of late capitalism, which he calls postmodernism. So again, postmodernism is not a theory. It is not a philosophy. It is the diagnosis of the cultural conditions of late capitalism. This is why to say that postmodernism is Marxist or there's a thing called postmodern neo-Marxism simply just doesn't make sense. Because if postmodernism involves a disconnect from history, Marxism is a way to directly connect our present experience to historical analysis. You know, postmodernism wants us to ignore history, right? And just buy manufactured nostalgia. Whereas Marxism is a way to analyze history to find the roots of our current cultural crisis. And this connects to an idea that you hear a lot when people talk about postmodernism. This comes from Jean-François Lyotard, which is that postmodernism is an incredulity towards meta-narratives. The idea that postmodernism rejects overarching frameworks that explain everything. And Jameson thinks this part of postmodernism is bad because it serves the interest of capital. He writes that only Marxism can give us an adequate sense of the essential mystery of the cultural past, a mystery that can only be reenacted if the human adventure is won. And this also relates back to the moralism thing, because again, Marx wasn't like, capitalism is bad. You know, he was like, capitalism is really good and really bad, and we need to understand precisely why this contradiction exists and where it's gonna go. And this is another thing that Jameson points out as a Marxist, is just like Marx wasn't saying that capitalism is bad, so we need to go back to some sort of pre-capitalist utopia. It's not that like postmodernism is bad, so we gotta go to what came before it. Postmodernism is a necessary condition of the current economic configuration of capitalism. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. We need to figure out, what does it mean to work through it? What does it mean to see the contradictions in our culture via postmodernism and do something with that? I mean, one way to think of this is that we're basically asking, how can we use the alienating and exploitative mechanisms of art and cultural production under capitalism to do stuff that's more human? Like I'm right here now on YouTube, a very postmodern-y mechanism and platform, trying to do things and talk about things that go against the logic that facilitates this very platform. So maybe that's something, I don't know. Now, one of Jameson's solutions to the problem of postmodernism, or at least one method for how we can approach leftist cultural production, is something he calls cognitive mapping. And it basically means that we need a type of cartography or sort of map that shows us where and how we exist in the world. It shows us the sort of connections that are at play that postmodernism might be hiding from us. You know, for example, in my last video, I talked about depression and how we might think of depression as just an isolated biological phenomenon. But when we dig deeper, we see that it's something that involves our relations to work, to the economy, to our communities, and the lack thereof. Basically, when we make a cognitive map, we see that depression is a capitalist problem. And this makes sense because Jameson goes on to later say that cognitive mapping is nothing but a code word for class consciousness. So in the context of the depression video I just mentioned, it's realizing that mental health often relates to our class position in society. And until we eradicate that class positioning, we're going to have those mental health issues. And if you want to check out that depression video, I will put a link in the description. Okay, there's a lot more I could talk about here, but I think that's the main gist. People are getting postmodernism wrong because they're thinking about it like a philosophical or moral theory, when it is not that. It is the description of the cultural logic of late capitalism. And if we miss that point, well, then we miss the whole thing altogether. Okay, I know I threw a lot at you guys with this one, but if there's one main takeaway, you can think about something that Jameson famously wrote, which is always historicize, meaning that the main way to fight against the logic and the cultural conditions of postmodernism is to think historically, to analyze our contemporary problems in a clear historical context, and an historical context that takes into account material and economic conditions. And this is important because often the people that are using postmodernism as some scary thing are doing postmodern stuff themselves. They are the ones who are embodying, facilitating, and perpetuating the exploitative logic of late capitalism. And while he is a difficult read, I am going to link some Frederick Jameson in the description. Check it out if you want. Also, a huge shout out to all of my patrons, especially all of my biggest dogs. I see you. I appreciate you so much. As I try to make all of this sustainable for me as a job, your support is really crucial, especially your early support. I can't really rely on YouTube ad revenue because, you know, capitalism, postmodernism, things of that nature. And if I'm honest, I don't want to have this channel be completely dependent on the marketing budgets of various companies because, again, postmodernism and stuff. So thank you for your support. If you want to join the Patreon, there's a link in the description. I really appreciate it. So in the meantime, you know, read some books and think about some stuff, because when we stop thinking, when we stop being critical, when we stop analyzing, well, friends, that's when the bastards win.